This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. Okay, to recap where we are in our long national supply chain nightmare, there are 85 container ships anchored out waiting to dock at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach as I speak. We've been keeping track of those containers for a series temporarily unavailable, how stuff moves around the world or doesn't. And we've talked about containers a lot because 90% of global trade goes by sea. So today, yes, because I'm a history guy, but also because it's important, a little backstory on how shipping containers came to be all that with a couple of people who are in pretty much the same position you and I are right now.
We ordered furniture last spring, and it took several months to arrive.
That's Joseph Bonney. He covered shipping as a journalist for years.
Well, we're actually trying to buy a car right now, and it is very hard to get a new car.
That's Teresa Fort. She's an associate professor at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth.
Yesterday, a sofa was delivered to my apartment. It took more than 9 months for the sofa to arrive.
And that is Mark Levinson. He's an economist, a historian, also the author of Outside the Box, How Globalization Changed from Moving Stuff to Spreading Ideas. The other name you need to know is Malcolm McLean, who 70 or so years ago was a truck driver by trade, also a businessman, and he'd built one of the biggest American trucking companies of its time.
And he was increasingly concerned in the first half of the 1950s that traffic congestion was delaying his trucks.
So he sells his trucking company and buys the Pan Atlantic Steamship Company out of Mobile, Alabama.
The reason for this is that shipping, like other modes of transportation, was quite heavily regulated. One couldn't simply start a ship line. So he bought one that already had the right to sail up and down the East Coast and the Gulf Coast of the United States.
For a while, McLean thought about just loading and unloading trucks themselves from those ships. And then he had a better idea.
Malcolm McLean had bought this vessel for very little money and had installed a false deck on the top of the tanker on which the containers could be placed. The first modern container ship voyage was on April 26, 1956. It involved a tanker ship left over from World War II called the Ideal X.
The SS Ideal X carried 58 containers from Newark down to Houston. Here's Joseph Bonney.
That is generally considered to be the start of the modern era of containerized shipping.
But just a start, because there were, of course, a lot of details to work out.
If you can imagine spending a decade in smoke-filled hotel conference rooms discussing how thick the end wall of a container should be, that's what went on here. The participants in these negotiations were overwhelmingly engineers. Some of them worked for ship lines, some of them worked for railroads, some of them were involved in the trucking industry, some were involved in the manufacturing of containers, and each of these parties had its own separate interests.
Standardization, the key to scaling the container economy, eventually came. Containers are now 8 feet wide and either 20 or 40 feet long. Again, Teresa Fort.
Shipping containers revolutionized how trade occurs and made trade costs much, much lower for many goods, made it a lot easier to get lots of different products onto ships, get them off the ships more quickly, load them directly onto trucks and trains, and then distribute them across the country. And so, you know, all of that then allows businesses to become more competitive, to have lower prices, to have more higher quality, more sophisticated products that they can bring to market.
Which gets us to...
The container was really key to what we now think of as globalization.
A box. A really big box that you put stuff in. Simple, but genius.
It's been interesting. This current supply chain crisis has made many people aware for the first time that of the role that container shipping plays in our daily lives. And it's a large essential industry that was hiding in plain sight for a lot of people.
And now you know. Teresa Fort at Dartmouth, retired journalist Joseph Bonney, and historian and economist Mark Levinson helped us out there.